Crime and Punishment by Fyodor Dostoevsky. One sultry evening, early in July, a young man emerged from the small, furnished lodging he occupied. His dress was so miserable that anyone else might have scrupled to go out in such rags during the daytime. This quarter of the city, however, was not particular as to dress. Besides, the young man's fierce disdain had reached such a pitch that he felt no shame at exhibiting his tattered garments in the street. He had not far to go. He knew the exact distance between his lodging and present destination, just 730 paces. He had counted them when his plan only floated through his brain like a vague dream. At that time, he himself would not have believed it capable of realization, but a month had elapsed, and he had already begun to view it in a different light. He had accustomed himself little by little, and indeed, in spite of himself, to consider the realization of his dream a possibility, though he doubted his own resolution. He was but just now rehearsing his enterprise, and his agitation was increasing at every step. His heart sank, and his limbs trembled nervously, as he came to an immense building facing the canal on one side and the street on the other. This block was divided into a host of small tenements, and people were swarming in and out through the two doors. There were three or four dvorniks belonging to the house, but the young man, to his great satisfaction, came across none of them, and, escaping notice as he entered, mounted at once the stairs on the right hand. "If I feel so timid now, what will it be when I come to put my plan into execution?" thought he, as he reached the fourth floor. Here he found the passage blocked. Some military porters were removing the furniture from a tenement recently occupied, as the young man knew, by a German official and his family. Thanks to the departure of this German, for some time to come there will be no one on this landing but the old woman. It is as well to know this, he thought to himself, as he rang the old woman's bell. In another moment the door was opened part way, and the occupant of the rooms stood examining her visitor through the gap with evident suspicion. But when she saw the people on the landing, she seemed reassured and flung the door open. The young man entered. The old woman stood silently in front of him, eyeing him keenly. "The student Raskolnikov, I called on you a month ago," said the visitor hurriedly, with a slight bow. He had suddenly remembered that he must make himself agreeable.
"What is it you want?"
asked the mistress of the house dryly. She had followed her visitor in and planted herself in front of him to examine him more closely.
"I have come to pawn something, that is all."
With this he drew from his pocket a flat old silver watch.
"But you have not repaid the sum I lent you before. It was due 2 days ago."
"I will pay you the interest for another month. Have a little patience."
"I may have patience, or I may sell your pledge at once, Batushka. Just whichever I like."
"What will you give me on this watch, Alyena Ivanovna?"
"That is a wretched thing, Batushka. Last time I lent you 2 small notes on your ring, and I could have bought a new one at the jeweller's for 1.5 rubles.
"Give me 4 rubles, and I will redeem it. It belonged to my father. I expect some money soon."
1.5 rubles, and I shall take the interest in advance."
1.5 rubles, protested the young man.
"Please yourself whether you take it or not."
So saying, the old woman tendered back the watch. Her visitor took it and was about to depart in vexation, when he reflected that this moneylender was his last resource. And besides, he had another object in coming.
"Come, fork out," said he in a rough tone.
The old woman fumbled in her pockets for her keys and passed on into the adjoining room. The young man, left standing there alone, pricked up his ears and began to make various inductions. He heard this female usurer open her drawer. "It must be the top one," was his conclusion. "I now know that she carries her keys in her right pocket. They are all hung on a steel ring,
One of them is three times as large as the rest. That cannot be the key of her drawer. Then she must have some strong box or safe.
The old woman reappeared.
Perhaps I may be bringing you some other article soon, Alyeina Ivanovna. A silver one, when I get it back from the friend to whom I've lent it.
These words were uttered with much embarrassment.
Well, we can talk about it then, Batushka.
Goodbye. You are always alone. Is your sister never with you?
Asked he, with as indifferent an air as he could assume, as he entered the anteroom.
What have you to do with my sister, Batushka?
Nothing. I had no reason for asking. Goodbye, Alyeina Ivanovna.
Raskolnikov made his exit in a perturbed state of mind. When he had at length emerged upon the street, he exclaimed to himself,
"How loathsome it all is! Can I ever? No! It is absurd, preposterous. How could such a horrible idea ever enter my head? Could I ever be capable of such infamy? It is odious, ignoble, repulsive. And yet for a whole month..."
Words and exclamations, however, could not give full vent to his agitation. On looking round, he saw a dram shop near. Steps led down from the footpath to the basement. The young man barely paused before he descended the steps. He had never before entered such a place, but he felt dizzy and was also suffering from intense thirst. There were but a few people in the place. One of the company looked like a retired official. He sat by himself, from time to time raising his glass to his lips and glancing round. He seemed considerably agitated. Occasionally we come across strangers who interest us at first sight, even before we've exchanged a word. This was precisely the effect produced on Raskolnikov by an individual who looked like a retired official. He never took his eyes off the man, doubtless because the latter returned his gaze and seemed anxious to open a conversation. Suddenly the stranger began to speak.
"Shall I be taking a liberty, sir, if I presume to enter into conversation with you? Allow me to introduce myself as Marmeladov, a titular councillor. May I ask whether you are in the service?"
"No, I am studying," replied the young man, slightly surprised by this courteous language, and yet annoyed at finding himself thus abruptly addressed by a stranger.
"Then you are, or have been, a student," returned the official promptly. "I thought as much. My instincts are unfailing, sir, and founded on long experience. You have studied, but allow me."
And rising, glass in hand, he changed his seat to one near the young man. Though intoxicated, he spoke distinctly and with tolerable coherence.
"Sir," declared he, with a certain solemnity, "it is true that poverty is no vice. I am aware that neither is intemperance a virtue, more's the pity. But indigence is a vice, sir. You may be poor and yet retain your natural pride, but when you are indigent, you retain nothing. Why do I not work? Is not my uselessness a source of annoyance to myself? When Mr. Lebezyatnikov beat my wife with his own hands a month ago, and I witnessed the scene, dead drunk, did I not suffer then? And when my own daughter went to have her name entered on the police register, I was obliged to go too," added he, parenthetically. "I bear the mark of the beast, but my wife, Katerina Ivanovna, is a lady and the daughter of an officer of high standing. And yet, if she would but have pity on me. We occupy a room, but how we live or how we pay is more than I can tell. The house is a perfect bear garden. Meanwhile, my daughter Sonya has been growing up. One day, not long ago, the children were starving, and Katerina Ivanovna walked up and down the room wringing her hands. I was lying down, I may as well say it, drunk, and I heard my Sonya's sweet voice say gently, 'But Katerina Ivanovna, how could I do that?' 'What?' returned Katerina Ivanovna ironically. 'You must have a fine treasure indeed to preserve it so jealously. Oh, do not accuse her, sir. Do not. She did not know what she was saying, and her words were meant rather to vex Sonia than to drive her to evil ways. It was then past 5 o'clock. I saw Sonyechka rise, put on her burnous, and leave the house. At 8 o'clock she returned, and going straight up to Katerina Ivanovna, laid 30 rubles in silver upon the table before her without saying a word. Then she lay down on her bed with her face to the wall, but her shoulders and whole frame kept quivering. I was still in the same condition. At that moment, young man, I saw Katerina Ivanovna move and kneel down in silence by Sonyechka's little bed. There she knelt the whole night long, kissing my daughter's feet and refusing to stir. At last the two fell asleep in each other's arms. Yes, the two of them. And there I still lay, stupefied. Marmeladov paused, as if his voice would serve him no longer. Then he suddenly filled his glass again, emptied it, and after a while resumed. Since then, sir, my daughter, Sonia Semyonovna, has been entered in the register, which obliged us to shift our quarters. Our landlady showed herself inflexible on this point, forgetting that she herself at first favoured the intrigues of the madam who initially made the suggestion to Katerina Ivanovna. Here Marmeladov struck his forehead, and closing his eyes, leant on the table. "Why should anyone have pity on me?" he suddenly continued in an excited tone. "Why, say you? You are right. There is no reason why they should. The proper thing is to crucify me, nail me to the cross, and show no pity. Oh, Lord, thy kingdom come." He fell back on the bench exhausted, without looking at anyone, as if he had lost all consciousness of his surroundings, and became lost in a deep reverie. "Let us be going, sir," he said abruptly, raising his head and addressing Raskolnikov. "Take me home. It is time I went back to Katerina Ivanovna." The young man had been wishing to move for some time, and had already thought of making himself useful to Marmeladov. The legs of the latter were far more unsteady than his voice, and he leaned heavily on his companion. They had only 300 or 400 paces to go. Raskolnikov recognized Katerina Ivanovna at once. She was of a fair height, and had a slight and tolerably good figure, but looked very ill in the face.
"So, you have come back," cried Katerina Ivanovna, in a voice tremulous with anger. "Villain! Monster! But where is the money? Let me see. What have you in your pocket? These are not your own clothes. What have you done with them? What has become of the money? Speak!"
She seized her husband by the hair in a sudden fury and dragged him into the room. Marmeladov's patience did not forsake him. He followed his wife with docility, crawling after her on his knees.
"I like it. It does not pain me. I enjoy it, sir," cried he, as Katerina Ivanovna shook his head violently.
The child, who had fallen asleep there, woke and began to whimper. The little boy, who was standing in the corner, could not bear the sight. He began to shudder and scream and darted to his sister.
"It is all gone in drink. Every kopeck,"
vociferated Katerina Ivanovna in despair.
"And you, sir,"
she said, turning suddenly upon Raskolnikov,
"are you not ashamed to come here straight from the dram shop? You have been drinking with him, have you not? Then be gone!"